Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life,
with a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Hello, Ange. Hello from Canada.
Hello from London. Nice to see you. Feels like ages.
I know, it has been ages as well, obviously with the kind of few weeks while we were getting sorted over here and ending up on top of the mountain. Things didn't go quite as planned, and so obviously we filled in, thankfully, with the recordings that we'd each taken of other jewellers, so that helped get smooth things through for the listeners.
Brilliant, we like to keep things nice and smooth.
It's our ultimate goal, isn't it?
So what's the weather like with you at the moment?
The weather literally outside is probably about 15 degrees at the moment. And that's because, rather, we are about 5,500 feet up on the top of the mountain. But when you go down into the valley, it's 10 to 12 degrees more. So as the day progresses, because it's just gone 11 o'clock here, that is going to get hotter. I mean, it's usually kind of mid-30s down in the valley in the Okanagan at the moment.
Does it feel good to be back?
Yes, love being back. It's lovely to have caught up with all the people that we met last time and the people we knew beforehand. There's a slight hiccup here now in that we are, as I think you know, and a lot of the people who listen know, trying to emigrate here. And we were using a scheme, or we're trying to access a scheme called the Rural and Northern Immigration Pilot Program. And in this area, which is the one of two areas in BC that we explored at the beginning of the year and decided we'd go for, they've now restricted the number of applicants to certain skill sets. So they are only accepting job applications within government, healthcare, and trades. And jewellery isn't, and stained glass, in fact, is not considered a trade. So we are expanding where we're looking again. We're looking back in the West Kootenays, where we stayed for a month. And we're actually going to start looking also in Nova Scotia, on the opposite side of the country.
Oh, wow. Have you been to Nova Scotia before?
Never been.
Oh, well, Canada's huge, so I'm sure there's lots of other bits that you can explore if need arises.
Well, there are a kind of couple of other areas we contemplated, shall we say, which are not far from British Columbia. The next one is Claresholm in Alberta, but apparently that's in one of the hurricane areas. So not wanting to be blown away like the Wicked Witch of the West, we've thought maybe not that one. The next one is a place called Moose Jaw in Saskatchewan. And Moose Jaw is a sizable city, but for about 5 months of the year, it's completely covered in snow and nobody goes outdoors.
Oh, blimey, that doesn't sound very inviting.
No. So we thought we'll probably just give those two a miss and we'll hit the eastern coast with Nova Scotia as an option. They have different immigration programs there, but they're also looking for foreign nationals to come into the country. So we're keeping our options a bit more wider than we had expected to.
So how are you filling your time?
So I've decided, let's act as though this is where we live rather than where we're going to live. So I've ordered myself some jewellery tools so I can work in wax. And the wax has arrived and my little rechargeable kind of Dremel type tool has arrived and the wax carving bits. And I have ordered some gems. Some from Justin of Xander Gem Collections, who I've talked about before. So I've got some little party sapphires and something else coming from him. Can't remember what now. So they should arrive in the post in a week or so. And I've ordered some more Amalite. Amalite, weirdly, comes from the Rockies in Canada. But I've ordered it from Pakistan.
Right. Can you not get it in Canada?
Well, I don't know. You'd think I could, couldn't you? But I bought some pieces from this guy off Etsy while I was back in the UK, and they arrived, and they were so lovely, and I didn't bring them with me, but I thought they would work really well in what I want to do now. So I went back onto his Etsy page. It's MU Gem Collection or MU Gemstones, and he had some that were the right kind of shape for what I want to do. So I thought, sod it, I'll just order those and they'll turn up, you know, when they turn up.
And were those beautiful multicolored stones that you posted?
Yes.
They came, this has been a matching pair.
So this time I've got pairs again. Rather than being the kind of drop shape, I've got more kind of rectangular shapes coming, more kind of window shapes.
And is that a naturally occurring stone? I just assumed it was a man-made thing.
No, amalite is. Amalite comes from ammonites, which are the swirly fossils.
Right. Oh, fantastic. No, they were absolutely gorgeous. No, I did actually see that post and went looking on the Etsy shop, and he's got some gorgeous pairs that you can imagine being very fabulous earrings or things like that. They were gorgeous.
Yeah, they really are. And they will drill them for you as well, which I thought was really good. So if you want them drilled in any particular position, they'll drill them before they send them to you, which I thought was a really good service to offer. And it's free.
And is it quite a hard stone? Where is it on the sort of Mohs scale stones?
I don't know, to be honest, because it's quite thin. I mean, what these ones have is they've been turned into a doublet. So it's quartz crystal that has been faceted with the amalite put on the back of it.
Well, can't wait to see what you make with those. Are you excited to be able to start making?
Yeah, I am. It seemed to make sense to do things. I mean, I brought some of the jewellery here with me, pieces from the latest collection, because I thought I'll see if there is a gallery somewhere that might like to, you know, to offer them. And also, I hadn't had the opportunity to hoodwink anybody into modeling for me again with these ones, so I'm going to get some of the ladies here to do that.
So do you always do your own photography, David? Are you quite comfortable photographing your pieces?
Yeah, I really enjoy doing that, actually. It's funny, people have often said, you know, why don't you get a professional to do it? But once you understand how to get the jewellery looking the way you want, so I see no reason to not do it yourself. I mean, obviously, while I'm here, I don't have my big camera kit with me because it weighs a ton. So I'm just using my iPhone. But cameras on iPhones are so good these days that you can't go wrong, really.
No, that's great. I mean, I must admit, I'm quite happy to photograph pieces on a surface with my phone, but I always feel that I should try a bit more. I've got a digital SLR, and as part of the scholarship, I did a few photography courses, which were great because it helped reawaken those connections of my brain that switch off every time I pick up my SLR. So I now, you know, the basics of the right sort of lighting. But as you say, I think it is practice and doing it regularly. But, you know, I've always seen your photos of your pieces or models, and you took pieces or photos with your pieces on me, and you're very happy and comfortable behind the camera, or you seem to be, and getting people to pose and for your pieces to look good. And I think that in itself is a skill, aside from just taking the pictures on someone. They've got to look like the person was meant to be wearing them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And now you have this fantastic collection to obviously photograph on people, so you have no excuse not to practice.
Nice segue there, Mr. Lilly. Yes, my collections. First of all, big hug and thank you again for coming along to the Private View. It was so lovely to see you, and it was really lovely to have your support. It was a really nice evening. It was much busier than we all expected, which was great. And it was nice to actually see all of my work in one place, because I did have a bit of a panic on the day of setup, thinking, oh, I haven't got enough work in there. This cabinet looks really bare. But once it was all done and dusted, and then I stepped away and then came back to it, I was actually like, oh, I've done quite a bit of work here over this year. It's lovely for you to come along and have your support there.
It was fantastic to come along and see all the work in the flesh. It was really interesting to be able to get to grips with the scale of things, because that's the one thing I mean, as much as you will photograph bangles on your wrists and earrings on and such like, you never quite or I don't quite get it until I see it there in front of me, and I can, you know, touch, taste, and smell it, type of thing.
And talking of bangles, you were wearing a lovely piece, which I was admiring and keeps popping into my head for some reason. Because you're not really a bangle or cuff maker, but you had that lovely piece with all the stones that you set yourself. Can you tell me a bit more about how that came about?
Yeah, thanks. Well, kind of two things, really. I mean, a bit like you, being a magpie, if there's something shiny and sparkly and colourful, I have to buy it. And so I've got this collection. Oh, and we must talk about the tourmalines as well. I've got a collection of gems that I keep buying, that I buy faster than I ever put into any pieces of jewellery. I've always been nervous about setting kind of princess cut and emerald cut stones, because you've got to get the hole that you're putting them in, you know, precisely cut. And I was thinking about coming out here, and do I want to make a piece of jewellery to wear out here in particular? When I was thinking about Vancouver Pride that we're going to, and then Nelson Pride that we should go to as well, I thought, let's do something stupidly outrageous, colourful for Pride. And I thought, oh, pendant, because I obviously always wear pendants. And then I thought, well, that's a bit lame. So let's do something that's going to give me a challenge. And I had this piece of 3 mil thick sterling silver that I hadn't used for anything for ages and never was. So I thought, right, okay, I think there's enough there to roll down to about 1.5-2 mil that I can then solder the two pieces together, and it'll be long enough for a bangle. And it was. So I thought, okay, so let's stick with this square idea and put the majority of square gems in it. So I just got all the ones out, and I thought, well, I like setting some of them culet up as well, so I can put some in upside down. And some of them were completely square. Some of them were slightly peculiar shapes, in that they were kind of sausage shape, in that they were square down the sides and then round at the end. I don't even know what you call that shape.
Difficult,
yes. So, yeah, so off I went and started cutting all these shapes out so that I could sit the gems in. And then the idea was that I was going to bezel set them all. And I was thinking about how best to solder the bezels on without unsoldering the one next to it, because you've only got hard, medium, easy solder. And you obviously, as you know, once you've done a hard, you can do a medium, and then you can do an easy, and it doesn't come unsoldered. But there were 10 of them. I thought, well, there's no 10 gradations in solder. So I decided I would cut it up into, or form it into, 5 sides. So it's flat across the top, 2 down the side, and then 2 underneath. And therefore, right, I would have a space where there was only a small number of pieces of bezels that need to be soldered at any one time. But what I didn't consider was where you've got the bend in the silver, you actually have to heat a lot more than the bits that's just in the flat.
Okay.
And because I'd already cut the holes, a lot of heat was going up through the holes, and then it was catching the actual bezel wire, because I was just using 0.3 mil bezel wire. So it probably would have been better to have left the whole thing flat, mark out simply with drill holes where I wanted the pieces to be, solder the bezel wire on in place, and then cut the seat out inside, which would have been fiddlier, in that I wouldn't want to destroy the bezel wire, but it might have made the soldering easier, because one bloody bezel wouldn't solder to save its life. And so I had to give up on that one. And I then, what did I try doing to set it? I tried kind of star setting it with the culet down, but it was too tight on my wrist, so it popped out. So I lost the Mystic Topaz. Thankfully, they're cheap as chips, and so that wasn't a problem. Thankfully, I had more than one of those gems the same size, and stuck it in culet up, so that there was no pressure underneath. And then I just set that in round the sides. There was a tiny little Swiss topaz, which is about 3 mil. And again, I couldn't get the bezel wire to solder on that. So I hammer set the others. And the others, I bezel set. Most of them came out fine. And this was, for me, this was a learning experience, in that to see, can I do this? Can I do it well? Can I get better at it as I start at number one and get to number 10? And I wouldn't say necessarily I did. I probably got better at 4, and then it went downhill from there. Also, it's just a bit of fun. I'm never going to sell it. If I was to make something like this, I know what it would cost now, because I know how much time it took. and what the cost of the gems and the silver and everything else are. So that was a useful exercise in itself. And I've now got this ridiculously blingy thing that Chris says looks more like a kind of beam me up Scotty type of thing, you know, for when you want to get out of somewhere fast. Just press the right combination of gems and I disappear in a puff of smoke.
No, it looks fabulous. And I think, as you said, pieces like that, we conceive them in our heads, and the making is always, well, for me, much more complicated, but it's a brilliant learning experience. And I'm sure next time you do it faster, and you'd probably think of better ways around it, you know, part of which you've just described. But, you know, I think it's great. And as you say, as an exercise in how to do something, there's no better way than, you know, challenging yourself.
And it was fun to do. It was fun to do. And it, I mean, I enjoy wearing it. I do keep knocking it on everything, so I'm probably going to wreck it before long. None of the gems are incredibly expensive. I think the most expensive one was a pink kunzite at 35 quid, but the others were a lot cheaper. So if it ends up being that I take all the remaining gems out after it's been, you know, through the wars and melt the silver down, it doesn't matter. It was a fun thing to wear. And as you say, it was a learning exercise and I learned a great deal by doing it. So what would you say, doing another segue, was your biggest takeaway from your De Beers scholarship?
Oh, quite a few. But I think one of the main ones, from the perspective of being a very long-term student at Morley. I mean, I've been going to Morley, looking back at some notes I'd found, probably 8 years, maybe even nine. And I generally always stuck with the same tutors. You know, you meet someone you like, you go to their classes and you just keep going. You know, your classmates, you grow to love, you're like a little family, and it's fantastic. But when Paul Wells, who was my tutor, when he left, we were all sort of set adrift. And we're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then the scholarship came along and I had the opportunity to attend lots of different tutors, and they've all been amazing. And I've learned so much from different people. So I'd say to anyone going into sort of learning a jewellery course or class, fantastic if you find someone who helps you get started, but don't be afraid to diversify and try other things, because different tutors not only have different ways of teaching, they have different skill sets, they look at your work differently, you'll get feedback that might be completely new to you. So that was one of the biggest takeaways for me, from a student perspective. The other, I'd say, was embracing my style. As you saw my work, I don't know what you thought, it's quite different to a lot of the work that I've done before. There were lots of common themes with the geometry, but I felt I pushed myself in terms of my design and the scale of the pieces, which I found really exciting. So that was really good. So trusting my gut, really, and going with what I want to do rather than thinking, oh, will someone buy this? I think we've talked about this before. For me, making isn't about necessarily making things that are always going to sell. I make because I enjoy it. And I think if you take away that joy, then you end up with slightly vanilla pieces.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also, without wishing to sound disparaging, I would say the quality of your making has come on as well. You've always had this very free style, and I think you've now committed to actually saying there's nothing wrong with this freestyle, but I can make this freestyle more poignant, more connected with the quality of my work. Because I know I get to a stage when I'm making and I think, you know what, I've done enough. I'm bored with this now. I've had enough. I want to move on to the next thing, which is never a good idea, because I think it's the term complete a finisher. Complete a finisher is someone who will go to the nth degree to get something exactly right. And that's not naturally me. My pieces get to the point where I've had enough of them. And I know that I have to look at that point and say, does it need more work? And I think looking at where at the collection you've created through your De Beers scholarship is you've looked at your work and said, there's another thing that I have to do here. And I think that's what elevated it above the work that you've done before.
Oh, that's really lovely of you to say. I think what one of my sort of objectives, which I think I achieved, was creating a collection, because I don't know, similar to yourself, where I just love making pieces. And as you said, you make it and you think, well, that's it, move on to something new. but trying to actually stretch myself and see one idea and expand it into other ideas that could be wearable pieces was initially quite a challenge, but then became quite fun, to the point where I've got loads of ideas in my head where I can now extrapolate those pieces into slightly more everyday wearable pieces, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, and one thing I really loved, well, there's actually two things I particularly loved about this collection was, firstly, the three-dimensionality of it, and then you had pieces that were very much coming off the body wherever they were worn, which I thought was fantastic, in a way that was unexpected, and also because you combined the square wire with lots of flat surfaces. And in doing so, you created volume where you had a kind of an unexpected view of the piece because it was framed by the wire. And that was really lovely.
Oh, it's really nice to hear someone describing my work the way I see it in my head, because you don't often get that. And I think only another maker, and also you're a maker who works on a different, you know, in different disciplines, whether it be glass or, you know, if you've explored other materials. So you actually see things differently. So, yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Lilly.
That's all right. It just proves we're as weird as one another.
Yes. Weird is good.
Certainly is. So where are you taking your weirdness next with your jewellery making?
Where am I taking my weirdness next? Good question. Well, I've got some exciting news, but I'm not going to share it yet.
What?
No, I'm just going to leave you hanging. That's fine. I'm just going to leave dangling.
Woman, that's
but
good.
In terms, yeah, no spoilers yet. But in terms of general everyday weirdness, obviously the scholarship's now finished, so I'm back to being a communal garden struggling jeweler. But that's all good. As I said, I think I want to explore some of the pieces that I made for the main collection to make other pieces. So I've got a couple of ring ideas in mind. And I also want to work a little bit more with gold on a very small scale, as my budget doesn't allow anything massive until someone decides to buy it. But I really enjoy the look of gold with silver. So I'm currently working on some wax carvings. One of them is a ring that is going to be, in my head, one part silver, one part gold. But I'll keep you posted with that one.
Lovely. I look forward to it. Is this going to be a gem set ring as well?
No, it's not. But I have been making some gem set pieces. I finally finished a citrine ring, which I originally made, gosh, maybe about 8 years ago, and set them quite badly in bezels. But I love the design that I created. It was sort of Art Deco-y inspired. And having gone through the course and done some wax carving and also some stone setting courses, I was in two minds as to whether to make wax cast bezels or go back to basics and make them out of sheet. So I decided to go for the latter option. Made the bezels, got my trusty gravers out, cut the seat, and set the stones. And again, they're not perfect, but they look so much better than the originals. But it was more the experience of practicing what I'd learned. And like you were saying with your bangle, there's lots of things I'd learned that I would do differently, least of all making the bezels a bit neater to start with. It's always that thing of, if you do something right at the beginning, there's less work to do at the end. It sounds so obvious, but I do it every time, but I'm learning to break that habit. But yeah, I managed to set these gems and reassemble the ring, and it's great. And I picked up a couple of tips. I don't know, have you heard of Setter's Friend, David? This might help you with your future stone setting adventures. Setter's Friend.
No, I've ideas? Never heard of Setter's Friend. Who is Setter's Friend?
Setter's Friend is super glue.
Oh.
I was told by, super glue, a couple of tutors and a couple of my classmates, when you're setting your stone, if it's a stone that's got a bit of a wobbly bottom, or the shape is a bit odd, set it in the seat, drop of super glue to hold it in place, and then you do your pushing over. And then you push it in your ultrasonic to get rid of your Setter's Friend and Bob's your uncle. Fantastic. So yes,
I like
that's the only time you will ever hear of glue being used in any of my work.
And going back to gemstones, we have a little parcel of tourmalines that's turned up now, haven't we?
We do. They're sat in front of me.
Ooh.
And they're lovely. Every day I look at them and I'm just trying to decide which ones I want. But they're quite small, so I'm trying to think of a nice, dainty, but impactful piece that they'll work with. But they are yummy.
Fab.
I'm shaking them on camera to David here. So yes, we're going to have to divvy them up and decide what you want to do with them. I can't wait to see what you're going to do with them, because you use gemstones a bit more imaginative than me. I think I always just stick them in rings, although I kind of feel I should try some earrings.
Yeah, why not? The stuff that I'm going to be creating in wax at the moment, I think some of these will be ideal for that. So when I know which ones I'm going to be allowed to buy.
I'm taking the ones that are easiest to set, if that's a clue.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean not the long, tiny, thin ones that could snap in the middle so easily then?
Exactly. Every day I change my mind. I kind of feel I should challenge myself, maybe try one of those. But yeah. We'll see. We'll see. It'll be fun, whatever.
Yeah, just to explain to the listeners, I came across a collection of beautiful blue, kind of steely blue, aren't they? But there were more than I wanted to buy. So I said to Ange, look, I've seen these. Do you fancy kind of coming in and buying them with me? She said, oh, yes, definitely. So this was days before I came out to Canada. So I said, right, I'm having them sent to you. And then you can decide which ones you want and I'll have the balance type of thing.
Yeah, we like a bit of bargaining, don't we?
Oh, we do indeed. We definitely do. Now, we are running out of time because we've been yakking away as usual. So I suppose we should get on to our Instagram people that we're going to promote today. Who are we going to promote?
Okay, you go first.
So I was thinking about time that I actually acknowledge there is a fantastic jeweler in Ukraine who is obviously having a very hard time at the moment. And this is Tanya Koliada. I think that's how you pronounce her surname. She makes jewelry that is very much kind of Art Nouveau inspired, but with a modern feel to it. And I really like her work. It's clearly organic in its style because, you know, Art Nouveau is organic, but she produces some amazing stuff. And she's considering what they're going through over there. She's still making jewelry. Her husband is obviously not with her. He is fighting, and she has posts that obviously are about him as well as about her jewelry. Her jewelry is stunning. She obviously needs support. If you know anybody who loves her style of jewelry, then please let them know about her. And her Instagram feed is koliada.t. So that's koliada.t. And it's Tanya Koliada. Love her work. Very talented jeweler in need of our support at the moment. And she does a lot of work through her feed on supporting the Ukrainian army as well. And telling us kind of what's going on for her while she's in the middle of it. So yeah, that's mine, Tanya Koliada. And who are you going to talk about this time, Ange?
I'm actually going to promote or talk about The Forge. I don't know if you had a chance to go to The Forge, David, before you left. They're based on Leather Lane. So this is, I suppose, applicable to our London-based audience, or at least UK. And The Forge is the brainchild of Amanda Mansell, who is a jeweller herself, has been in the trade for many years. And she set up, it's a multi-purpose space. So it's a gallery space for emerging and established jewellers. They have workshop bench spaces to hire, and they run courses. And Amanda very kindly came along to the private view that we had. So definitely give The Forge space a follow. So they are at The Forge Space. That's all lowercase. And that's on Instagram. And they do lots of lovely activities, meetups, drinks, all sorts.
Fab. Yeah, I'd never heard of them at all. What a shame that I wasn't aware of them, you know, while we were back in the UK for a bit.
No, they're very new. But yeah, I think they'll be a really good asset to Hatton in terms of space for exhibiting.
Fab. And we've got some exciting interviews that you have done coming up soon as well, haven't we?
Coming up. will be a lovely interview that I did last weekend with Russell Lounsborough of the Wax Carving for Jewellers book fame. We had a really nice chat, which was a little bit sweary. I'm not sure whether Mr. Lilly's going to edit us out, but it was all very spontaneous and all very relevant to what we were chatting about. And the chat's so good that it's going to be in two parts. So hopefully that will be airing soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Talking about airing, I better get out into the lovely air here. I don't know, what's the air like in London? Is it humid and horrid?
No, it's lovely. It's a much cooler day. I've just come back from a really nice power walk. I'm trying to get myself back in shape after months of just thinking, eating, sleeping, jewellery. I'm now trying to look after myself. So I had a nice walk in a very cool London air.
Excellent. Well, I shall go out and not walk because we've got half an hour down the mountain by car. So I won't be walking down, walking up again, that's for sure. And I will see you very soon.
See you soon, lovely.
All right. You take care. Lots of love.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track of Topi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.